Thanks for listening to Dusty and Cam podcast, brought to you on the fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Center. Doing the right thing since 1952.
This is Dusty and Cam in the Morning with Dusty Hera and NFL veteran Cam Cleland.
I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal in Michigan, most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one to stop me.
On 1080.
I'm the best ever.
The Fan.
All right, hour number two on this beautiful Friday morning in the Rose City. Dusty Hera, Cam Cleland with ya. 503-250-1080. We were talking last hour, which advantage could the NBA bring to Orlando to help the higher seeds in the playoffs? How about dressing up Mickey and Goofy and Donald Duck in the home team jerseys, putting them in the stands? The animatronic presidents have Abe Lincoln in a LeBron jersey. Why don't you do that? Create your home court. Have your fans in the stands. All of them Disney characters. It's not as dumb as giving an extra foul to a player, is it? Or a preferential hotel treatment at Disney. That's wild to think about.
Yeah.
All right. Major League Baseball continuing to miss the point, my man. As we see the public fight between the players and the league, it continues to come to a head. Yesterday we talked about how baseball, the owners are saying that 114-game a proposal where we just prorate your salaries for all of it, they're not even going to counter that offer, and they're just saying, we have it in our right to just play 50 games at your prorated salary, and we just may go ahead and do that. But more information is starting to come out. The Tony Clark of the Players Union is saying, you know, we want to get something done. We feel like we have to, but the overwhelming consensus of the board is that the players are ready to report, ready to get back to the field, and are willing to do so under unprecedented conditions that could affect the health and safety, not just of themselves, but their families as well. The league's demand for additional concessions is resoundingly rejected. And that's what the owners are saying. It's basically both sides are patently rejecting whatever the other side has to say. And they continue to miss the point on what baseball's return could mean for the sport and for everybody around it.
And so here's what I propose, and I'm thinking about this. And so I'm going to ask this question, and we can propose this and think about it. As baseball continues to do this, and I think that it's failing because it's a broken model, and you could see that the two are fighting over this. And look, it just doesn't play well in the media. It's not playing well. My question is as it inches closer to football season, we know football season takes our eyeballs, takes all our passion. It's not everybody's cup of tea, but we do know it's the number one television program on every channel come fall, even come August. I mean, just look at the numbers when you're watching the Hall of Fame game. As baseball continues to do this, if we inch, because they're not going to hit that July 4th start date that we all hoped.
No chance.
There's really no way it's going to do that. Even listening to Jeff Passan, he was talking with Golden Wingo this morning. He's like, that's not even a chance. So that's passed on by. NBA is going to start July 31st. As Major League Baseball continues this, okay, is it okay to say that it might be the biggest afterthought come July? And how are you going to be okay with baseball just going away this year? Really, how upset are you going to be if baseball goes away? Because remember, if this was April, you'd be like, oh, gosh, what are they fighting for? By the time we hit mid-July, NFL free agent, not just free agency, you're going to see all these the teams jockeying, training camps going to get started. Because the NFL is going to start. NFL starting. The coaches are coming back into the offices. That was announced by the NFL yesterday.
As of today.
How much are you going to miss baseball? Truthfully, be honest, because the more you hold this off, the bad taste in the mouth. There's so many distractions at this point. We know NFL, college football is kind of fighting over it. NBA is going to fight. NFL is going to hold us together. They're going to be the glue. They understand it. They're going to be the glue that keeps it together. They're going to push through. They're going to have the most pushback, but they're going to be willing to do all that. Baseball's not willing to do that. If it doesn't happen and we see this fight, you said yesterday you might be losing fans. I don't know if you're just losing fans. I think you're just like, we don't care anymore. I'm feeling a little bit of that, and that's scary to me because I miss baseball tremendously. But as soon as July hits, my mindset shifts all the way over to football. Smell of football, the feel of football. And then August hits, it's all in. And if you haven't got things squared away, you just might be a massive afterthought. And that's disappointing for the whole sport.
And I sit there and I thought I was talking about it yesterday, is that I think that it's a massive opportunity, Miss, to rope in new people to baseball too, because there's a lot of people that it's on the periphery for them, even when it's going on, but they have a chance to be the only team on the stage early.
What ropes people into new baseball?
Gone.
What's your theory of really why that? How does baseball rope people in?
Because it's the only thing available, and people want competition, and people want a distraction, and people are at home. And the longer that this thing goes on, and the more that, you know, we have states transitioning into phases of normalcy. I mean, heck, we had the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, yesterday. He said 50% capacity. So you could have a situation where the Astros and the Rangers, the two teams that play in the state of Texas, could have 20,000 fans in each of their stadiums for baseball games.
So here's
and that to me is like, that's where you're missing that opportunity. As the states open up more and more, there becomes less of that attention you could grab from fans just wanting to see sports and wanting to see that distraction.
Yeah, I've never been on the side of baseball needing to make wholesale changes. They got to make a little bit of changes. Mm-hmm. But I don't think new fans just jump into baseball. New fans didn't just get started with golf in the 90s when Tiger Woods came along.
I think they absolutely did.
Well, no, hold on. Let me finish what I was going to say. So as Tiger changed the way we watched it, it was the story of Tiger Woods that made golf change and made them become more interested because of who he was as a character and an entertainer, his story. Baseball ropes fans in when they have brands and stories. You know, some of the times when it's Yankees, okay, and it's Red Sox, that's a story. That is something that we have to watch because it's traditional or it's drama or it's a television show. You don't turn on a television show because the television show is faster. You turn it on because Steve Carell is a star. Major League Baseball needs to market their stars, but they also have big brands. So when the Dodgers are facing, I don't know, the Yankees, or you're getting San Francisco Dodgers weekend, that's a story. That's something that we need to watch. That is not having to just, oh, maybe Houston plays somebody in Texas in the middle of that. That's not going to capture new fans or capture a country, because baseball understands it's a marketing and how we watch the sport. The average person will tune in to watch Yankees Red Sox because there could be a fight or there could be something interesting, or it's like, man, those are classic brands. That's what baseball is going to miss out on. The new fans are going to come and go. The average person coming in and grabbing a hot dog and sitting and watch a show, that's not what they want. So if baseball is going to miss out on that, that's where they miss the mark for me for that. Those big brands and those stars that you want to watch.
And I do agree with you on those ideas there, but I also think that Major League Baseball is missing that opportunity to start marketing those stars and marketing those stories.
Well, they've never done that.
Baseball is loaded with characters. I mean, it is loaded with characters. I mean, there are guys in baseball but you just don't know their stories. You know, they could, like, Yelich is a great example of this. He's got an awesome personality. You could highlight that. You could highlight Christian Yelich being funny and engaging with fans on, be it social media or, you know, just his personality as a whole. And that is how you could rope in some new fans, is by doing that and taking the stage and being there by yourself.
Yeah, and that's,
and saying we're the first ones back. We're
right
here for you.
But Christian Yelich isn't going to,
and developing a relationship.
Christian Yelich and Milwaukee Brewers is not the same as Mookie Betts and the Los Angeles Dodgers. It's just a different kind of grab, what you're saying. Is it,
but that's how
minusculely
some
interesting? Is it kind of like Giannis in Milwaukee? Yeah, it's along the same lines. It's like, oh, he's a really good player. Those things, kind of like when Derrick Rose won the MVP for Chicago. It's like, oh, we're trying to get this guy interesting. Finding a way to make, like you said, market a star. Baseball's never been great at marketing stars. They haven't been. They've kind of been, we're a regional, and that's a regional sport. Baseball's a regional sport. It struggles with the national. I mean, there were times when you turned on a television, you had fans out here because they watched the Cubs play on TV, or Atlanta became an America's team because they were on Turner. Was that regional, or was it because they were just on television? Understand the power of TV and what they're missing out on in their big brands.
And that is 100%. That is 100% what could get new fans in my mind is exactly what you just outlined right there. And it is a missed opportunity. I mean, I think we both agree on that. They are missing that opportunity, and then they're creating even an even further divide by having guys like Tom Ricketts, the Cubs owner, who's coming out and saying the scale of losses across the league is biblical.
You want to talk about tone deaf right now.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And he's saying, you know, I hope so baseball fans will understand. Most baseball owners don't take money out of their team. They raise all the revenue they can from tickets and media rights, and then they take it out of their expenses. This is a league that made over $10 billion last year. Okay.
Are any owners in any other sports saying these things right now?
No. Although you like the NBA, like it's known NBA is going to take a hit. It's known NFL is taking a hit, but baseball for whatever reason wants to take it more public than ever. But the players are saying, fine, if that's it, open up your books and show us how much money biblical, you guys are losing.
That is the word you used, biblical, like the locusts are flying in and stealing your bank accounts.
Yeah, that's so what, you're gonna lose. That's what Tom Ricketts is saying.
Wow. Just what we need. Now we need Jerry Reinsdorf to chime in and really make it happen.
So, and this is the thing though, is that like, if it is these quote unquote biblical losses, Tom Ricketts, then do what the MLB players are saying and say, all right, then open up the books and we'll see, because we've seen this time and time and time and time and time again, that owners in baseball will say that, and then they get a community to fund a stadium, and it turns out that those losses weren't nearly as much as what they had said. Miami Marlins, okay. I mean, we saw that play out in Miami, where it was we're not making any money. They're making hundreds of millions of dollars a year.
Yeah, I don't need to see the owners' money. We know they got money. I don't understand the value of them opening up the books. Is that just a scare tactic? So, okay, well, great. We get to see that they have lots of money and all this extra money.
It's calling the bluff is what the players are saying, and saying that what you're doing is BS and don't do it.
Well, it shows specifically what they're holding back from players.
Right. So right. Do you really need that as a fan, or do the players really need that?
No, but the players want that exposed so that we get on their side, so that the public is on their side.
Correct.
Even though the public already is on their side.
But does that help baseball by just throwing barbs at each other and calling each other? Is this contentious battle like that and throwing back and forth gonna help anything?
No, but it continues that baseball is missing the point as a whole, as a league, you know? And
yeah, they're fractured. That's why I say it's broken model right now. It's a very disappointing broken model.
Well, and as Jeff Passan pointed out this morning on Golic and Wingo, part of this posturing, which makes it kind of even worse and missing the point of what baseball could mean as a comeback, is that it appears that both these sides are posturing for CBA negotiations next year, because their relationship has been dwindling. And Passan said it's the worst it's been since 94 when they had the strike.
Yeah.
So
changes are coming.
It's getting worse and they're playing against each other. 503-250-1080. Sign of optimism, though, in college football. What Mark Emmert, the head of the NCAA, had to say to leaders of Congress yesterday. 7:14 on the Fan. 7:18, Dusty here, Kane Cleveland with you. Leaders from the NFL, NHL, PGA, NASCAR, along with Mark Emmert, the executive director of the NCAA, met with the White House's reopening task force for sports, their return to play task force. And Mark Emmert said, among other things, that this season could be shortened, where at the FBS level, conference championship games are played by Thanksgiving, eliminating 2 weeks of the regular season and kind of mirroring the academic calendar, where a lot of universities have opened up their plan where the in-person instruction would end by Thanksgiving and then return back in like February or something. But this is the first time that Emmert and the NCAA have openly said that there could be an open change to the way that the football calendar is actually played. But he did say that the plan is to start on time.
He did say the plan is to start on time. I think this is a telltelling sign of really Mark Emmert just trying to be a voice. He's been considered a consultant in all of this, because those that don't know, that the NCAA has no power over college football.
That's right.
Which I think is really hard for everyone to understand sometimes, because the players, the actual players, fall under the rules of how the NCAA is set up. But the games, the structures, the bowl games, the championships, all those things, the conference championships, are all under different set of rules. So it's very strange. But to show you how powerless Mark Emmert is, the NCAA declined to even comment on it, because Bill Hancock, the executive director of College Football Playoff, said playoff organizers were playing on playing schedule, the full schedule.
Yeah.
In January 2021, I was like, oh, so does that mean that your playoff is going to happen no matter what? We're not going to modify that. None of that's going to change. So whether Mark Emmert's consulting or not, it shows, it really does show the lack of, I want to say, power that Mark Emmert has. And what was interesting, is so interesting about this, is that, is he trying to just say, hey, look at me, we're important a little bit, we still have a little bit of influence, but oh, by the way, in the end, it's going to be up to you states, and it's going to be up to you leagues and conferences to make your own decisions. We'll advise you, but we're not going to have any power over it.
And that could be a massive, massive advantage and disadvantage, depending on where you fall on this, on if your conference is going to play. Because if your conference championship game is at the beginning of Thanksgiving, but some other conference is playing their championship game that, what, second weekend of December, as we often see, then you're looking at an extra 2 weeks off for that team, where that's a rust factor, where, you know, having, if the college football playoff is saying, no, we're still going to have, as scheduled, Rose Bowl semifinal January 1, Sugar Bowl semifinal January 1, January 11th, national championship game in Miami, then moving that calendar up puts your conference at a disadvantage, not playing that long and just having that much time off, because it already is a long enough layoff to go from, you know, what, 3 weeks is the layoff from the normal conference championship game to the to the semifinals.
See, the semantics of college football is not that important to me as I watch this and listen to this. What the overarching eye-opening facet of the NCAA is how amazing college football is operating under its own entity, when it's its own business plan, it's under its own values, it's under its own revenue stream. And it's not only under its own revenue stream, it's also fractured within that, where the SEC is different than the Big Ten, and the Big Ten is different than the Big 12, and then the ACC and the Pac 12, and then the MAC, and then all these other things are, all these tentacles are involved. And yet, here we watch this and we go, where is the unified front of college football? Why is there so much separation from what Mark Emmert is saying, from what everyone else is doing? And do that, the fracture model of this is I don't know if there's ever been a time where you've seen something so exposed of college football, and why it took this long to get there. Well, did it take a pandemic? Did it take, the fact is that players stood up, did it take name, image, and likeness? What has happened to college football?
How about Mark Emmert having, you know, the balls to walk into that meeting, or call into that meeting being like, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and give an informed decision, information on this to congressional leaders, even though he knows he has no power over what's going to happen with the schedule of college football.
Well, they're laughing at him. No, they're laughing at him. Conference leaders are laughing at him. Regional coaches and directors are laughing when he tries to make a point, when they try to govern over anything.
They're like, hey, Mark, you're in sports, so why don't you come here? You know,
it's like, oh, we'll have you come sit in. You guys want to sit in the meeting?
What would you say you do here?
It's perfect.
And that
could be more perfect.
You're going down, it'd be like us being invited to a meeting on like all of the business affairs of our office. And they're like, we are the ones that speak for it.
Yeah, we appreciate you like, being here.
I don't really know. I can tell you what I think's gonna happen. People have told me some stuff.
It's like the courtesy invite, you know, the courtesy invite to the party.
Yeah.
You're like, gosh, I guess we better, you know what we should do?
We got to invite Mark.
We better invite Mark. We don't really want him to be here because he's going to tell us what he thinks he wants to do. But okay, we'll just invite him because, you know, he's a nice guy.
What I've also found interesting coming out of that meeting is that Steve Scalise, who's a representative out of Louisiana, who's kind of leading up this return to play task force. He said that there's some schools that might not play football next season, and that's their choice. And then they're going to have to modify the schedule to work around that. First of all, I haven't seen of anybody that has said they're not going to play this year.
That seems like massive clickbait to me.
Well, but it's his quote.
I know it's his quote. It just sounds like some arbitrary comment. It's like, well, we think.
But also, it's not that school's choice. Isn't it like the local government that'll make that choice? Because I don't think that there's a FBS program in the country that's going to be like, yeah, we could play, but nah, we're not going to do it. The money isn't worth it to us.
How would you justify Texas State playing football and then watching a team from Northern California say
Stanford or Cal?
How would you even How does that process?
Well, it's not.
Well, it doesn't. That's the thing is you can't process it.
What Scalise is saying is that's their choice. If Stanford or Cal didn't play football, that would not be their choice. It wouldn't be their choice. They would be a forced hand because we all know that Stanford and Cal would 100% play if they could.
Of course they would.
It would be a choice of somebody else, a decision made by somebody else. But if that is the case, like a modified schedule where you're eliminating like league opponents, that is going to be a headache that schools are going to have to go through. And that's why, you know, we set that comment up by saying Mark Emmert really doesn't have any power over what's going on here is because I don't think that is going to happen. I mean, there may be a couple programs that aren't going to be able to play, but it's so far out there to think that right now that decision has already been made. In that they know what's going to happen, but
August 31st
can't
get here fast enough, can it?
That's game one, zero week.
Mm-hmm. I am so excited for week one in the Pac-12. I can't tell you, what Oregon and Washington have on their plate and USC have on their plate for those three games. I know those games are going to happen. I know they're going to happen. Chalk it up. Put the money on in Vegas. Put the post-it note on. That's going to happen. Those three games are as excited as I've ever been for Pac-12. That's it. Ella. I mean, that's from that week on, we're all looking around going, oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Well, all eyes right now are on Oklahoma State and Alabama because you see five players from Alabama tested positive yesterday.
Yeah.
After the day before on Wednesday, it was seen that 50 players were holding, like, and it wasn't an organized team event, mm-hmm. but they were on the band field at Alabama doing workouts.
Yeah, it's going to happen, guys. And then
five players ended up testing positive yesterday.
I mean, it's going to happen. It's just you're not going to be able to stop the way. I mean, you can't eradicate what's going on right now. So players are going to get tested, but they're going to be around the right people. They're going to be in a closed area. They'll be around the right medical staff. They're a lot safer there. Things are better under control in those situations than they are out on their own.
And hopefully we don't get to this point, but, you know, with all of these schools opening up at the beginning of June and then, you know, Pac-12 opening up June 15th, especially Oregon State.
Pac-12 go 0-3. Pac-12 go 0-3. 1-2, 3-0.
What?
That's what I'm saying. Those three games. Pac-12 go 0-3.
Oh, I don't know. 1-3. I don't know.
Make a prediction.
Well, hold on. I don't know, but we're going to see with the like Alabama's and Arkansas and all those schools opening up early, kind of if there's going to be a threshold for what stops everything. Because five in doing it for Alabama, and we've all known this. It's got to be you've got to have a plan of action, and they're seeing that plan of action right now with positive tests. So we'll find out.
Well, yeah, here's my the other college football teams that have an incumbent starter that's coming back, they have a huge advantage right now for what they're doing with their sports and what they're doing, because that gives them the comfort of knowing that they got a quarterback that has a little of experience. All these quarterbacks, new quarterback Oregon, new quarterback Washington, USC, they have a little bit of an advantage. Now they're playing Alabama, but all those guys that haven't had a chance to work with each other in the spring and get together, they got a lot of catching up to do.
1-2 is my prediction too, by the way.
1-2, who wins of all the teams?
I don't know yet.
What?
I don't know yet.
Well, you
don't know.
Say 1-2 and then.
Yeah, I know. I think USC loses to Bama.
Okay.
And then UW Michigan, that's a tough one.
That's the team I have winning. I have Washington because I think
Oregon, Ohio State.
Yeah, I just don't know enough about Oregon's quarterback situation. And Justin Fields is you're talking about the guy that's going to lead the Heisman Trophy candidacy right out of the gate. And Ohio State's there. I have Washington winning of those three. Now, they all could be good games, but that's the one that I have.
Oregon's defense has got dudes, though, this year.
Yeah, I know that. Their quarterback situation, baby. I'm very curious about what's going on there. Yeah. Same with Washington, but I'm not as scared as Michigan as I am of Ohio State when I talk about as good as they are. Now,
that's a good point.
It could flip. It really could flip. I don't know.
Yeah.
But Justin Fields is the only caveat, I think, that of all those three. And then Alabama is Alabama.
Alabama's going to truck.
Truck them?
Yes.
You think so?
Yes.
They have a new quarterback. They lost 14 guys. Mm-hmm. You think they're going to truck USC?
Yes.
What is Truck? 14 points, 21 points?
Yeah, something like that. I'll split the difference. I'll go 17.
What's the line right now? Do they have a line in Vegas?
Oh, they absolutely have lines.
Oh, yeah,
on
they
this.
Do. Hold on.
Do they?
Yeah, yeah. Buck will find that. And we will find that out. Plus, Adam Silver is already backtracking on one of his comments he made about the return of the NBA. Here's Buck with SportsCenter. All right, I got our betting odds that you asked for. Depending on where you look, Odds Shark opened up with Alabama as 16.5 point favorites over USC. It is now currently at minus 14 for Bama, so 14 point favorites.
Moving down.
The predicted score of that game via Odds Shark's algorithm is 48-23, though, which would be 25 points.
Wow.
DraftKings has the line still at 16.5 in favor of Bama.
I'm going to be optimistic on that. I think they. I think I take USC on that.
Michigan favored by 1.5 over UW, and Ohio State 6.5 over Oregon. Hmm. Fans in the stands potentially would be a big one in that. In both of those games, the Washington, Oregon, and Michigan UW game, though. Because home field, it does mean something in college football.
Well, you're still at the home, but you're right. I mean, you're not going to have the same energy with the
momentum,
fans, but you're still there.
Yeah,
still have to travel.
Yeah, it's a big game for
huge
all six of those programs, man.
Huge.
Because you got to get off on the right foot in college foosball. No, it's way bigger though for the Pac-12. We can all agree with that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a showcase too. That's what makes it even more fun. It's the showcase of both conferences. Going up against each other, all three conferences going up against each other. It couldn't be a better stage for what the future of the Pac-12 might look like.
503-250-1080. That is the fan text line. Who you's taking in those? Adam Silver made some comments yesterday. He went on Inside the NBA and discussed what the return will look like of the NBA down in Orlando. It was good to see Ernie, Kenny, Shaq, and Chuck. Just seeing their faces again was great. And they're as entertaining as ever, and I love them all.
The best shows on television.
Absolutely. But Silver made some headlines when he was talking about what the coaches are going to be looking like on the sidelines and where they were at the beginning of the COVID-19 outbreak and where they are now.
One of the things we know, we've learned a lot more about the virus since we shut down in March, and the data is demonstrating that for the most part, there are exceptions that healthy young people are the least vulnerable. But there are also people involved in this league, particularly some of the coaches who are obviously older people. And we also know people at any age who have underlying conditions are more vulnerable. So we're going to have to work through protocols. And it may be, for example, certain coaches may not be able to be the bench coach. They may have to retain social distancing protocols. And maybe they can be in the front of a room, a locker room or a ballroom with a whiteboard. But when it comes to actual play, you know, we're not going to want them that close to players in order to protect them. So those are all issues we're continuing to work through.
Uh-oh.
And then Adam Silver had his Deion Sanders moment. Full backpedal.
Yes, he went...
Rick Carlisle did not like it.
Chris Berman, back. Because, Rick Carlisle, head coach of the Mavs, he is the, head spokesman for the coaches union. Mm-hmm. That's a thing. You knew that?
Yeah, there is coaches union. Sure. Yeah.
And he said, I just spoke to Adam Silver. He admitted he jumped the gun with this statement on TNT.
Yeah, whoops.
Because I bet Carlisle's sitting there going, wait a minute. Wait, what? Because 65 is an at-risk age, right? Is what they're saying. You're more prone to have stronger and more adverse effects to COVID-19 mm-hmm. if you are over the age of 65. That would be Greg Popovich, who is 71, mm-hmm. Mike D'Antoni, who is 69, looks great for 69, mm-hmm. and a guy that I had no idea this guy was 65 years old, and he looks fantastic. Alvin Gentry of the New Orleans Pelicans is 65 years old.
Oh, I could see that.
He looks like $1 million, man, mm-hmm. for being 65. But imagine what Adam Silver just said in a ballroom on a whiteboard, but not at the game, in what Pop, D'Antoni, and Gentry would mean to their teams, X's and O's wise, during a game and just strategy wise, not being there.
Yeah, I don't understand the protocol. I thought all these guys are tested. So once everybody's tested and managed, isn't that okay now? So once you're under those situations, how is having him sit with a whiteboard going to make any? I mean. I can't process that. I'm trying to really figure out what the value is, because not having Greg Popovich on the sideline or any of those coaches on the sideline is that is there's a reason why they're great coaches, because they know how to in-game coach. Not all the other guys know how to do that. Now, not everybody has a LeBron who's a player coach or a great leader that can do that. But you can't not have your coaches there.
Yeah. And Carlisle said as much. He's like, hey, I mean, it's entirely possible that an NBA coach in his 60s or 70s could be healthier than someone in their 30s or 40s.
Yes, yes.
You know, he said the conversation should never be solely about the person's age. Adam assured me that we would work through this together to help determine what is both safe and fair for all of the coaches around. And, you know, it reminded me of that Ramona Shelburne. Mm-hmm. She had that anonymous GM who said that the league, it's unfair to put anybody at risk that could be at higher risk. Remember that quote from like a couple weeks ago?
Yeah.
Where he said that it's my job to keep everybody safe. Mm-hmm. And that's where like this whole, should older coaches be allowed to return?
Well, can you give them the option? What about the option? Couldn't they choose, or you just immediately say, we're not allowing you? Isn't that part of the reason? Are they doing that for players? Are players getting the option? Look, you can forego your paycheck if you don't want to come play. Is that options that the league are discussing? If coaches say, I don't feel comfortable, no problem. We can work through this.
Greg Popovich would rather be in a hazmat suit on the sideline than in a ballroom on a whiteboard watching the game remotely.
He's not going to freeze this thing from a distance on a hospital bed. It's not going to work.
Now, that would be a hell of a thing. That was a hell of a thing when Hugh Freeze, up to
was in a hospital bed in a suite. What was his ailment again?
He had back. Remember, he had an infection in his lower back.
Okay,
yeah, he had back surgery, and then an infection made it so there was like fluid buildup, and he had to be horizontal.
Horizontal.
Oh my!
That was so crazy. Some crazy things.
I don't think that there's any doubt. We'll see all those coaches. And now it may look completely different, but guess what? The entire NBA is going to look completely different when they go to Orlando or playing in a bubble in front of no fans.
You know it won't be different. They'll dribble, they'll shoot, and somebody will win.
And it's going to be the Blazers. No? Okay. NFL, Cam's new favorite team. Dustin Cam on the Fan. We're talking about the return of college football earlier. Mark Emmert says, could see modified schedules, could see some schools return, might not be able to play this football season. Tool Truck Guy chiming in on the social medias said, when college football returns, I think they should allow all fans to attend games, although they must be required to wear a face mask and an unlimited amount of alcohol for medical purposes. Well, I think when the fans do return, the alcohol will be flowing, because that's just what college football fans do. How prone would you be to return to a game as of right now, though?
First in line.
503-250-1080. First in line.
First in line.
No issues going.
Nope.
Any caveat to restrictions in the stadium that you would have?
Whatever the protocols they want, just tell me. I'll be there.
So if they said everything open, pack them in sardines, you'd be down for that because that's what the protocols said?
Yeah.
Go ahead, do.
Right. Look, I'm not a CDC member, and I'm certainly not a doctor or an epidemiologist, and I'm not in government. So I love college football, so whatever way possible.
It is interesting to see how that idea is changing, though. Because again, we said this a month ago, though. What we know then and what we know now is going to change dramatically in a month. Mm-hmm. And then we've got another month, and then another month, and then you got a half a month, and then football's here. And so, you know, I think it's interesting to kind of take inventory of that to see how that changes and evolves. 503-250-1080. That is the Fan text line. 503-250-1080. I'd love to hear from you on this one. On the how many fans would you go right now?
So are you asking in a sense of what would make you feel comfortable? Anybody feel comfortable?
Where our comfort level is right now? You know, because we had this question as I said a month ago, and it was overwhelmingly, no, I'm just not there yet. I wouldn't be there. I'm not there, and I don't know where I'll be when it comes time.
Where's yours?
I think if, again, as you said, if the protocols are in place And, you know, you get the green light from the health experts and medical professionals, you know, taking inventory of the disease and how it's developing in that area, specific area. Yeah, I would be. I don't think I'd be ready to go to back to a packed stadium. I'm not there. But if it was, say, half full, quarter full, whatever, I would feel comfortable with doing that. You know, would I wear a mask? Yeah, I'm wearing a mask at the grocery store right now. And that's kind of where I'd be at right where I'm at currently. Is mm-hmm. I would be in a mask, but I would go. And there's
well, we do know so protocols are going to be in place, so can't we just throw that caveat
for sure.
out?
Well,
so it's just more like of,
but it's
of,
just kind of where you are mentally right now.
Yeah, because I don't think it makes any sense to say if protocols, because I'm thinking along even what I mentioned is that we do know there's going to be some sort of things in place when you go to a game, so it's not going to be a packed house, at least not this year. There are going to be things that are structured. So the question is, will you go back? Do you feel comfortable going back?
Mm-hmm.
Just football. I think it's a kind of an easy question to say yes or no. Do you feel comfortable? No matter what protocols are in there, there's some they're going to be comfortable and some they're going to be not.
Yeah.
I would definitely feel okay going back to college football.
This text says, I'm not scared of getting the virus necessarily, but I'm not trying to join mass gatherings. You know? Unless there's a vaccine. P1 Tyler says, I'd be in the stadium. I know there'd be risk catching COVID. After a few adult soda pops, I'd forget about that risk. And that is kind of a scary one, though. If you do have that fear when you're sober, what will happen when you're not? And that is a concern, right? And that's where we stand right now of what we know and what we don't know about the virus and where it's at.
Oh.
Do you have a...
So drinking a few beers is what's going to make the...
It impairs judgment. We know that.
Oh, yeah. But I guess we're assuming that there's a bunch of alcohol served at Autzen Stadium?
Well, no. I'm just saying. I'm going off of what that text said.
No, I know. This is what I'm trying
and
to get.
And what college football is
yeah.
You know,
tailgating, all the other drinking, things, partying, yeah, having fun, enjoying the moment.
Yeah, it will be a different college football experience for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, stadium full or not, it's going to be different.
Whatever
than the
parameters
lots.
The Autzen Stadium and Research Stadium set up, would you go or not? That's kind of how I look at it. Whatever the parameters are, mm-hmm. would you go or would you not go?
Yeah. In Texas, 503-250-1080. Do you have a new favorite football team? Because I think Bruce Arians said something that may have you as a Buccaneers fan all in on it. Their base personnel in the 2020 season is going to be 12 personnel.
Mm-hmm.
One back, two tight ends. And he's saying, we may go three tight ends.
Yeah. Well, that's...
Have Gronk, Brate, and O.J. Howard all on the field at the same time.
Well, that's not new. That's what Baltimore did the majority of year last year anyway. So Baltimore was one of the best teams now. They didn't win in the playoffs. But they played with three tight ends and two tight ends predominantly the entire year. In fact, San Francisco, again, did a lot of that, a lot of it. And you don't really consider Juszczyk a tight end, but I'm here to tell you that he is an H-back. He's not a fullback. He plays all over. He's kind of the U tight end. It's how I played in St. Louis, is at the move guy in motions and leads. So they do that predominantly. And I'm telling you, the winds of change is starting to, you get to see that if you can control the ball a little bit longer with Brady and give him some more options to protect that pocket with these quarterbacks like that who aren't fantastically mobile, but even Lamar Jackson was amplified by bringing an extra guy down there to help block.
It also makes sense too in regards to, you know, we know Tom Brady is going to have a say in what they do offensively because Brady's most successful years in New England, if from a statistical standpoint, were when he had Gronk and Aaron Hernandez, you know, and we know how and why that all fell apart and went away. But yeah. When he had two tight ends that he could rely on and were his go-to guys, that was when he was setting records. And if you look at the way that would set up, if you have two tight ends, you still have Mike Evans and Chris Godwin on the field. And their big question offensively is who is their third receiver?
So the reason I'm such a, okay. this isn't bias. This is basic. This is football acumen of trying to analyze exactly why certain matchups work. So I'll take my tight end hat off, but 12 personnel gives you the versatility when you have those kind of tight ends like Godwin, and then you also have Gronk. If you put them on the field together, you create matchups, and you're trying to create mismatches, just like you do in all those other things. If you put them in hand down, you put them in deuce personnel, you put in solo, which solo in the West Coast terminology is two tight ends. Solo right would be, you know, your Y tight end and your U tight end or your H on the other side, depends on how you do that. But then you go shift to move or open, and now maybe Gronk stands up, moves out five in a nasty split. And then who has to guard him? Do we move a linebacker out, remove a spot in the box, and now we can check to a read zone? We can check to an inside run. I should also see if they keep a linebacker in, which let's say they keep the Sam linebacker on the inside, and they roll the strong safety down now to cover Gronk in a split out. Now that puts Gronk one-on-one on a smaller receiver potentially in the red zone or Godwin, and you create mismatches. The versatility of size in both the run game and the pass game in short passes is what makes this personnel so fascinating. It's my favorite kind of group, but other teams, you got to be able to have the personnel. You could say, oh, let's run it, but you better have the personnel to be able to make it happen. That's why it's so strategic, especially for Brady, and what makes it so successful.
Yeah, and it also, I mean, to what you're saying about that size mismatch on a strong safety, it also makes the defense choose whether or not you're going to sacrifice the middle of the field deep or underneath, you know, and little crossers coming across if that linebacker is going to have to go with Gronk, you know? Get a little bit of... He is such a dangerous weapon, and so is O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate, too. And that's the intriguing part of Tampa's offense, is that it's three guys that are pretty damn good receiving tight ends, at least all three of them. Mm-hmm. And then you have Gronk and Brate, who they can block, man, mixing it up. We got text 503-250-1080 on the football stadium thing. Sellout, no precautions, I'm there. Go Ducks. There are people that feel that way. I would go to a Beavers game with the same mentality I go to Home Depot. Not afraid of the virus, but I won't be high-fiving people either. Wow. If they have fans in the stands but only 50%, what about the season ticket holders? Now that is what Scott Barnes had that conversation either. How many students to sold tickets do you think will be in stadiums this year? Do you think the students are going to have a far, far, far smaller account for where they're going?
You guys are closer to that than I am. Ryan, you're about as close to the student side because you went to that. How much value does the students bring for Autzen Stadium? And do you think when you're talking about if they're going to give season ticket holder people or if they're going to allow students in, how would you feel?
It's tough because I think students pay a lot less to go to games than mm-hmm. the season ticket holders do, the people who are making donations. And so I think that if you're worried about revenue and revenue for your athletic department, you kind of have to serve the people who are going to pay. But I think if you're truly trying to create a collegiate atmosphere, you have to have students there too. So I don't know what the right balance is, but I think there has to be a balance of both.
So do you have a lottery for the students, kind of?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I don't know what... I mean, we also don't know what the demand is going to be, like how many people. I mean, I think a mm-hmm. ton of people are going to want to go. I don't know
of
if
course.
It's going to it's outpace.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what it's going to be compared to the students either.
I think the students are valuable. We'll know very quickly, though, what universities and stadiums and athletic direct programs value more, money or students. We'll know pretty quick when they decide which will be a priority. If they go half capacity, for gosh sakes, if we even compete with Texas, state of Texas, and you go half capacity, that's still 28. What is that? Is that 30,000 people that can go to a Ducks game? If you're just at
just
that
a
point,
hair under. Yeah.
That's pretty good. That's still a very good home field advantage.
503-250-1080. More of your thoughts on that. Plus, coming up next, it's always awkward, often offensive, exceedingly entertaining. It's our weekend. Would you rather on the Fan?